Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Glenn Frey died Monday at the age of 67, leaving behind a renowned musical legacy in multiple genres. A co-founder of the Eagles, who sold millions of records behind hits like Take It Easy and Hotel California, just to name a few, Frey began the group in L.A. in the early 70s after touring with Linda Ronstadt. By the time the group reformed for the Hell Freezes Over era in 1994, Frey had also released several solo hits like The Heat Is On and acted on Miami Vice. But as Frey told us in 2012, when we spoke about what would be his last studio album, After Hours, a collection of standards, the Eagles remained the mothership.
You know, that's kind of what kept me busy, family and the Eagles. And just, you know, I wasn't highly motivated to just write another batch of Glenn Frey songs. I did most of my writing for the Eagles. But this was an opportunity to, like you say, sort of show another side of me for me to, you know, be able to sing some songs that I've always, you know, held dear. And so, you know, with the help of my friends and a lot of talented people, we put this record together in the last couple years.
Now you go through St. Louis, Joplin, Missouri, Oklahoma City looks oh so pretty on a sea. Amarillo, Gallup, New Mexico, Flagstaff, Arizona, don't forget Winona, Kingman, Boston, San Bernardino. If you get hip to this kind of tip, yeah, go and take that California trip. Get your kicks on Route 66.
How long had you been planning to do an album like this?
Well, I wanted to do an album like this for a long time. Going back to even the 70s and hearing Harry Nilsson's album, A Touch of Schmielsen in the Night. He was the first guy I ever heard, pop singer that did standards. And then, you know, I loved the Linda Ronstadt albums that she did with Nelson Riddle. What's New and Lush Life were, you know, the benchmark records for me. Those are my favorites. I know other artists have kind of gone this way, but for myself, I just loved this music, and I got started recording a few of the songs, and it really whet my appetite to want to do some more. So that's really just sort of how the record evolved. We cut a couple things and they sounded pretty good, and then we decided to keep at it, and that's basically what we did for a couple years, and the end product is After Hours.
When you were, you know, selecting songs and recording them in the studio, did you find yourself being transformed back to the moments when you first heard some of this music?
Well, some of them I can remember when I first heard the songs. You know, obviously Caroline No, you know, which was on Pet Sounds.
That's not true. Oh, Caroline, you break my so sad to watch a sweet thing die. Oh, Caroline, why?
You know, The Look of Love, you know, I'm a big Dusty Springfield fan, and I remember her version of the Bacharach David song, The Look of Love. You know, and then some of the other stuff, actually, you know, I had only heard, you know, in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years. Some stuff I've known about for a long time. So it varied.
When you were selecting the music, did you seek out other versions of songs that have been covered, or were you going off the original and then sort of seeing how you would like to do it?
Well, you know, we'd talk about a song and whatever particular song it was, you know, sometimes we would listen to a previous recording of that song. Sometimes we wouldn't, but, you know, normally we'd go back and, you know, listen. I mean, like for example, Dinah Washington, she recorded this song called Too Soon to Know. And I love Dinah Washington, and it's on a collection of songs that I have. But then there were 20, 30 people that did that song. So I didn't think it was very useful to me to listen to all the different versions. So I just listen to like one version, the version I liked, and the version that I, you know, we would sort of maybe respectfully approach the song in a similar way.
Does he love me? It's too soon to know. Can I believe him
when she tells me so? Is she fooling? Is it all a game? Am I the fire or just another flame? A one-sided love will break my heart. She may be acting or playing a part. If she don't love me, let her tell me so. I can't hold her if she wants to go.
I didn't want to have too much input. You know, I wanted to sort of just find, just sort of do what felt natural and what sounded good to me and my partners, you know, as opposed to, like I said, listening to 10 versions of, you know, Sentimental Reasons, or There's No Reason To. Nat King Cole's is the only version you ever need to hear.
Comparing writing songs for an album and going in and recording them, you're responsible for lyrics, you're responsible for the singing, you're responsible for a lot of the instruments. When you're going in to do a song that's really showing off your voice, I mean, is that more or less pressure than the normal process you go through when putting an album out?
Well, it's not about pressure. I think it's just different. You know, when you've written the song, you know, and you know the lyrics and you know the message of the song, to me it's much easier to stand in front of the microphone and sing a song that I've written, because I know what I want to express and how I want to express it. When you're doing other people's material, you are an interpreter. And, you know, with the songs on this record, which, you know, the songs I love so dearly, you know, I wanted to, first of all, show respect for the original songs, the way they were written, the way they were meant, the way the writers meant them to be, you know, performed. And then you sort of have to, you know, it's a different kind of singing, Ian. You know, what I do most often in my musical life is I call it guitar singing. Mm. You know, I'm playing the guitar and I'm singing a song. This is a little different. You know, I think you have to sing more like a trumpet, more like a saxophone, more like a flute. That's sort of the nature of the songs. And so your voice needs to be compatible with, you know, with the instruments that are on the track too. So it was an interesting process for me to learn these songs and try to understand them and get to know them intimately, and then ultimately be able to go out and sing the song and, you know, be confident and emote and do all the, you know, the things that you do when you perform a song. So it was definitely different. You know, when I've written a song, I already know the song inside and out when I go to sing it, but it's a little bit different when you're doing somebody else's material. But it was exciting. I enjoyed going to work every single day. Every day I worked on a great song, Ian. It didn't matter, you know, get in the car. What are we doing today? Well, we're going to overdub on Caroline. No. Well, I guess I can put up with that for the next 6 or 7 hours. That's not so bad. But like I said, I had a lot of fun making this record, and it was great to be in the company of all this great music every day.
We plan to get married about 10 years ago. You stalled and you tarried. You wouldn't say yes, and you wouldn't say no. I'm getting old, my bones just creak. Someday I feel like new. when we'll hear the preacher speak, and I'll belong to you, and I'll belong to you.
Do you find that this is maybe a sort of a risky project for you, just because you've said people really won't expect this necessarily? And if so, is there something to being at the point in your career where you are, where you don't even have to worry about that? I mean, you're going to do what you want to do.
Well, I think you probably answered the question, Ian. Yeah, I mean, I don't feel any pressure. You know, I feel like I'm, you know, it's kind of like I've done my whole career, really, which is just sort of follow my instincts, you know. Sing and play and write what's interesting to you. And I think, you know, if you you put a lot of time and effort into something, I think the time and effort somehow shows. And, you know, so, but for this record, for me, the journey was the reward. I know that sounds cliche, but it's just true. I learned so much about myself. I feel like I'm a better singer. I feel like I'm a better record producer. All for having done this record. And, you know, what happens from here on out once the record comes out, that's something you really have no control over. So, you know, we just sort of see how it comes out. But I think, you know, the millions of people out there who like the Eagles, you know, some of them I think might pick this record up just out of curiosity, and then they'll be in for a big surprise.
This album came out of the music you heard when you were much younger. You said you've started a family now. Do you think that your own children could look back on this era and find the same sort of fondness for the music of this time in another, let's say, 50 years?
Hey, I'm sure. You know, every generation has its own soundtrack. And so, I have no doubt that, you know, my kids, are identifying with music that's out now, and that it'll always be something they look back on and say, remember when we listened to White Stripes, remember when we listened to Black Keys, remember when we listened to Black Eyed Peas, remember, you know, Wilco and Radiohead and Coldplay and Nickelback and, you know, Dave Matthews and, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, there's, you know, so I'm sure they'll have the same feelings about the music that they listened to when they were growing up.
That's Glenn Frey, co-founder of the Eagles, speaking with us in 2012 when he released his last solo studio album, After Hours. Frey died Monday at age 67. I'm Ian Pickus, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.